Of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting content from the March 2025 issue of Southern Living Magazine. This week, we're going to start with the Life at SL feature that begins every issue of the magazine, and then we'll get to the Grumpy Gardener, which is also in every issue, and then finally we'll start on some travel and culture experiences in the South, throughout the South. All right, you ready? The cover of this magazine is a palette of spring green. It's a soft green, and it looks the way an avocado would taste. That's how it looks to me. Actually, the color green is the color of the inside of an avocado. Maybe that's why I say that. All right, so we're looking into a living room here on the cover. The ceiling is the inside of the pitched roof, so there's an apex, a point there at the top of the ceiling, from which hangs a wire chandelier. It's just made of wire. It's very minimalist with four candles in it. And the inside of that ceiling we talked about up to the point has alternating dark forest green and very light green, very pale green stripes on the ceiling. So that's high, and the rest of it is that spring green color. And we are looking into a living room that has wall-to-wall windows, and the view outside the windows is all of evergreen trees. At least they appear to be evergreen trees to me. And the windows have those cloth shades that, you know, you pull down and push up, and those cloth shades are like a can't see it too clearly in the background, but it's a green and white check. And that is echoed in a lamp that's on an end table. Straight in front of us is a sofa, and the sofa has an end table on either side. And on one side, there is a lamp upon the table, and it looks like, yes, it is. It's wicker. The base of the lamp is wicker, and the lamp shade has rows of alternating green, just as we talked about, that spring green or avocado green, and white, like a linen white, not pure white, kind of an off-white. And there seems to be an ashtray on the table, and maybe a phone. Can't see it well, but it's a little blurred in the background. Upon the sofa, which is, like a slate blue, the blue of slates that you step on. And it has four cushions on it. Two of them are a brighter green, kind of a bright leaf green, a spring color of leaves in the spring. And the other two pillows have a leaf motif on them. Leaf motif. And so those are, of course, green and a little darker green. And they have stripes of that off-white color on them. The reverse of those pillows, you could see one of them is the solid green of the other cushions. The couch seems to have a wooden base as well. And the other end table is one of those ceramic tables. And it's of that slate blue color with a little bit of mauve and cream color stripes across the front of it. Can't quite see the top, but there is a plant sitting upon it. Seems to have a spode. I don't know if you can have ever heard of those. That's a very old china pattern, blue and white, a dark blue and white china pattern. It appears to be a spode flower pot. And there's a tall palm growing in it. And at the base, there are some of those shorter green-leaved plants. Before the sofa is a sofa table, I guess you'd call it, and it has a solid wicker base and a green cushion on top to match the green cushions on the sofa. And upon the cushion is the top of that sofa table is a large round green platter, and upon that sits a plant in a slate blue flower pot. And the plant is, I should know this, listeners, and I can't recall, but they're like elephant leaves. A caladium, that's what it is. It has dark green veins. This particular one is cream-colored with dark green veins. And there is a book that straddles the edge of this round plate. The book is face down and open. Half of it's on the plate. Its spine just about on the edge of that plate, and the other half on the cushion of the sofa table. And closer to the foreground, also on the right side of the cover, are two white wicker chairs. And they have green cushions. They're more lime green, much more of a springy green, those cushions. And they have cream-colored cushions upon them. And there's a towel, a slate blue towel, draped over one of the white wicker chairs. The carpet is a coffee color. It has a jacquard pattern or a diamond pattern. And it's espresso color and café au lait color. And finally, in the foreground are two drapes, those curtains that some people use to divide their rooms, and they tie them back. And these curtains go from the top to the bottom of the cover, and they are green and cream-colored. Sort of a check. They're squares. It's like a blurred check. And the green is a darker forest green. All right, the print from the top to the bottom, March 2025, Southern Living, A Colorful Home, New Ways to Decorate with Greens and Blues. And this picture we just heard about is from St. Simon's Island, Georgia. Across the bottom of the cover, it says, Why We Love the Hostess City, and Grumpy's Guide to Pass Along Plants, which we'll get to soon, listeners. And finally, The Thrill of Swimming with Manatees. Okay, sounds interesting. All right, here we go. And we are going to start with what's in every issue, Life at SL for Southern Living. And this is from the editor, Sid Evans, the editor-in-chief. And the caption is, There Goes the Neighborhood. Sometimes takes more than a house to feel like a home. And there's a photograph here that's scrapbook fashion placed in here. And it's of a man in a kiddie swimming pool holding a kitty in each arm. Looks like a three-year-old girl on the right about, and about a one- or two-year-old boy on the left, in his left arm. And he's wearing sunglasses. And the caption of the photo says, Me waving with my father and my brother Marshall, circa 1973. So, listeners, I misspoke. There are two boys, obviously. And the one on the right, that the man's holding on the right, is Sid Evans, the editor of this magazine and the writer of this essay. The little brick house in East Memphis, where I spent the first 9 years of my life, was a one-story, three-bedroom place that had dark green shutters and mustard yellow trim. Similar to other homes in the area, it had a small front porch with concrete steps, an open carport, and a postage stamp front yard that was shaded by a big elm tree. The backyard was enclosed by a chain-link fence, and my parents dubbed it the Evans Country Club after they added a few lawn chairs and a plastic swimming pool. We lived on a cove, which meant there was almost no traffic, and it seemed like there was a kid my age in every house. My brother and I didn't necessarily love them all, but we hung out anyway. Our parents would get together too, sharing in celebrations, holidays, and routines. On warm afternoons, all of the mothers would gather outside our house and drink sangria, taking turns going back inside to fix dinner. When I was in fourth grade, we moved to a bigger brick house on another cove, this time with a fourth bedroom and a downstairs playroom. I made good, wholesome friends there. But as our crew got older, we became sort of feral. I remember intense games of Ghost in the Graveyard, which is a scary version of hide-and-seek. I remember water balloon fights, touch football, and elaborate forts in the empty lot behind Old Man King's house. On the 4th of July, our dads would drink beer and cook a whole hog in someone's yard while we had a bike parade and shot bottle rockets. We also did some terrible things. Kids, don't read this. Like filling mailboxes with shaving cream, blowing up Lego ships with firecrackers, or running a piece of fishing line across the road with cans tied to either end. To us, there was nothing in the world funnier than hearing a car clang its way down the street as if the driver had just gotten married. I wouldn't want to see a bunch of preteens pulling those stunts in my neighborhood now. Thankfully, none of them are reading this magazine. But I do miss some of the action. With one child in college and another headed there soon, our days of Halloween parties, Easter egg hunts, and basketball games in the driveway are largely behind us. Still, I like the idea of living in a place where you know the people on your street, watch out for each other, and make time for an occasional cookout. I was thinking about all this when I read Associate Editor Carmen Beal's story, Making Room to Grow, on page 25. It's about a couple who live in Birmingham with two young boys and didn't want to leave their one-bathroom house, despite the space challenges, because, quote, the whole neighborhood feels like home, unquote. Their 1920s bungalow revival is an inspiring reminder of the power of creativity, teamwork, and a little paint. I just hope they don't let those little rascals get into as much trouble as I did. Signed, Sid Evans, Editor-in-Chief, and you can reach him, listeners, at Sid, S as in Sam, I, D as in David, at southernliving.com. And in the right column here, there's a painting, a small 2x2-inch painting of a white house that has a tree, can't tell what kind of tree, overarching above it. And it says, a house plan with connections. Why Tideland Haven has legions of fans. Perhaps the most popular house plan in Southern living history, Tideland Haven, was created by Historical Concepts, and those are initial CAFS listeners, as a way to connect with the natural world, featuring a large wraparound porch and tons of windows. Excuse me. It even has its own Facebook group, where owners can share their versions and modifications and how they have adapted it to different locations. The new Tideland Haven plan offers a variety of updates, including an extra bedroom. For more information, go to houseplans.southernliving.com. All right, and now on to the Grumpy Gardener, who is also with us in every issue. The Grumpy Gardener by Steve Bender. And the cartoon, which takes up almost a quarter of the page, and there's a cartoon that begins every one of these in each issue, listeners. And this one is of two tomato plants sitting on a bar stool, and in the window it says manure bar on the storefront window here. And these tomato plants have a card in front of them, and similar to maybe at wine tastings that you might have. But and on the shelf behind the bar, there are two taps, by the way, handles for the taps there. And on the shelf are jars, and they are labeled cow, horse, chicken, iguana, bat, yak, and llama, for all the different kinds of manure. And one tomato plant is saying to the other, whoa, what a selection. Let's do a flight. Okay. First question. Dear Grumpy, I'm amending my soil prior to planting and have considered adding manure to increase its organic matter. But what kind should I use? Are there any I should avoid? I'm asking you because I know you're full of it. Information, I mean. And that's signed Diane. Making a little joke at Grumpy's expense, are we? Jimmy Hoffa did that, and where is he now? So be very careful. Jeez. The first thing to know is don't go with fresh manure because it contains fast-release nitrogen that can burn plants. It might also harbor weed seeds and pathogens. Instead, opt for some that's been composted for 6 months to a year, whether it comes from a farm or in bags from a garden center. Let's compare three different types. Chicken manure is high in nutrients, so if you raise poultry, use the coop poop. Horse manure has a middling nutrient content, but if it's sourced from animals that have eaten grass treated with herbicide, it can damage your plants. Grumpy's go-to is black cow, and that, listeners, is spelled with a capital B for black, and cow is spelled with a capital K-O-W. Black cow, Grumpy's go-to is black cow manure. It's widely available, inexpensive, and lower in nutrients. Use it solely as a soil conditioner and not as a fertilizer. Next question. Slow motion tree. I bought a white fringe tree about 3 years ago, based on your recommendation. It has grown only 2 inches in that time. What's wrong? Signed, Woody. Assuming you didn't buy it at the Stunted Tree Emporium, never go there, folks, maybe you didn't dig a big enough hole. Trees need loose soil for roots to spread. Consider replanting it now. Make a hole 3 times as wide as the root ball, but no deeper. If the roots are tightly wound in a tangled mass, use a stick or a screwdriver to gently loosen and spread them. Place the tree in the hole so that the top of the root ball is a half inch above the surface. Fill in with the excavated soil. Then cover the ground around the tree with a couple inches of pine straw or shredded bark, making sure that the mulch doesn't touch the trunk. Okay, next one, buckled up. A friend of mine in the Georgia Mountains planted a young magnolia tree last year. It's 7 to 8 feet tall. Unfortunately, deer stripped the bark from around the trunk. Is there something that he could use to help it heal and keep away the deer? Signed, Patty. Bucks rub their antlers against tree bark during the rutting season to show dominance, to attract mates, and to look cool. They also do it in late winter to remove their antlers. If they strip the bark all the way around the trunk, then everything above that point will die. But hopefully, the magnolia will heal on its own and grow new branches. The best way to prevent future damage to this and other young trees is to protect the trunks with plastic or metal guards. Next, off with their heads. The Burford Hollies in front of my house are 75 to 100 years old. They're still healthy, but reach the second story. I think they need a big haircut. But I don't want to damage them. When can I do this, and how much can be removed? Signed, Megan. Grumpy comes bearing good news. You can do it at this very moment. Cut them back so they're a foot tall if you want. They'll look kind of ugly for a while, of course, but the bare trunks will leaf out fully in the spring. And just think, you won't have to prune them again for another 75 years. And finally, cover with clover. My black lab, Sadie May, keeps destroying the grass in my side yard. Rather than sodding for the fourth time or putting down artificial turf, the quote was $17,000 for 900 square feet, I've decided to sow clover. What do you think, Grumpy? Signed, Fran. Great idea. Clover requires very little maintenance, stays low, makes its own fertilizer, and is cheap. Let Sadie May roll in clover over and over. And here is Grumpy's gripe of the month. Bright red hostas, deep blue strawberries, roses that glow magenta at night, corn with tiny human ears. This is what you can now find for sale on social media, thanks to the ever more pervasive curse called artificial intelligence. Who falls for this? Well, given the sales figures, a whole lot of suckers who also buy desktop nuclear reactors for $10 plus shipping and handling. Before you believe one of these schemes, ask yourself, have I ever seen anything like that in my life? And if it were real, wouldn't all of my friends already have one? Go ahead and order those glowing rose seeds. Then you can claim to have artificial intelligence, too. And this has a tiny cartoon, listeners, of Steve Bender sitting at his chair with and using an upside-down wheelbarrow as a desk, excuse me, as he's on his computer. And there's a little flower kind of laughing at him beside him. Finally, in the right column of this page is a picture. This is the Know Your Plants section, and it's a picture of Firewitch dianthus. So there's a bush of them, and then there's a profile circle with the up-close photo of a blossom and a half of another one. And they are this magenta or fuchsia color. Well, he's calling it cheddar pink. It's a dark pink, basically. They may have dark green stems, and they grow densely packed together. Firewitch dianthus. This perennial's beautiful flowers, evergreen foliage, and ease of care will cast quite a spell. Excuse me. An award-winning form of cheddar pink, Dianthus gradienopolitanus. That's the Latin name, of course. Firewitch melds fragrant hot pink blossoms from spring to midsummer with ice blue needle-like foliage that stays evergreen in all but the coldest climates. Growing only 10 to 12 inches high and somewhat wider, it's a great candidate for massing, edging, and planting in rock gardens. Pollinators like it, but deer don't. And it tolerates heat as well as drought. Give it full sun and well-drained soil in USDA zones 3-9. Look for it at your local garden center or find it online at growjoy, that's growjoy.com. Signed, Steve Bender. And that's our Grumpy Gardener for this month. And finally, we'll go on to the South, Adventures in Travel and Culture. And listeners, we may only have time to describe the first page of this, the photo here, which is a, it's entitled Pull Up a Stool, Bradford House Boutique Hotel is both a Michelin key stay and a local hangout. And there's a bartender. We're facing a bar, bartender, and the bar is in that green motif, again, that spring green or avocado green motif. The bar stools are the same, and they have backs to them. They're wooden with vinyl cushions upon them. The bar is a nice wood bar in the front, and it has there's a small lamp with a white lamp shade at each position. And there's a chandelier at the top, and it's a wire chandelier with metal rods going out all around it. And the lights are at the end are like bowling pins with the bottom halves cut off to reveal the bulbs of the lights, of course. And there's a bartender, and he's wearing a bowler hat, or a black derby, and a brown apron. He's bearded and mustache. He wears glasses. He seems to be looking out a window. We can't see the window here. And he's shaking something. He's mixing a drink. And there's a basket of fruit on the table in the center on the bar and some other bottles and mixing accoutrement bottles and things and small droppers and such. And a shelf of all bottles in the bar is well stocked in the and beyond with glasses and bottles of liquor. So maybe we can start. Excuse me. There are many different places that are visited here throughout the South, listeners. The first one is OKC. It's the middle of the week in the heart of Oklahoma City, which is what OKC stands for, they're telling us. But you'd never guess it based on the crowds and the live music streaming in and out of restaurants and bars in the hip West Village District. I'm attempting to take a post-dinner stroll down West Sheridan Avenue, but find myself stopping to window shop every few steps. My list of places to visit during daylight hours growing by the minute. A little farther down the road, families, couples, and groups of friends relax on the grass at Myriad Botanical Gardens. The movie Barbie plays on a giant projector screen while Dua Lipa's dance-inducing theme song pumps through loudspeakers. The late spring weather makes the air feel ripe with possibility. But there was a time when the future of OKC didn't seem as sunny as it does today. And we'll hear more about that next time, listeners, because we've run out of time for today's episode of Southern Living. I hope you enjoyed it and hope you'll listen next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Please call us at 919-832-5138. Once more, that's 919-832-5138. So long till next time.